Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I've never known a sadder feeling than I have now when
what,
I go
being
around
on this podcast.
Yes, you're depressing me, guys.
That's Sam. Welcome to The Power Test. I'm Aisha Hazarika.
And I'm Sam Friedman. So welcome to this week's episode, where we are going to be looking at not the election that's coming at some point later this year that everyone's very excited about, but the local elections which are coming up in a couple of weeks, which we at least are very excited about and feel that more people should be excited about, because local democracy is in quite a lot of trouble at the moment and could do with a bit more attention and focus. Personally, I am a little bit obsessed with local elections to the point where I every year try and predict which way every single council will go, but that might be a little bit more than most people. I don't know about you, Aisha.
Just a soupçon, Sam. No, I love any election. I mean, I love local elections. When I was an advisor, I would spend vast amounts of time traipsing around the country with various Labour Party luminaries on the local election campaign. I mean, I love any sort of election. I love staying up. I love commentating on it. I remember once doing a brilliant overnight with them, Sky, for local elections, where I think we had so many sweets, we all had diabetes at the end of the night, which is like,
and I think more sweets than people watching.
It literally was. It was just like a sort of Haribo fest. It completely was. But I do think local elections are really interesting. And I know that my transition to a fully middle-aged menopausal woman is complete because I get really exercised about bins and things like that. I'm known as like the warden on my show. Like bins, potholes. I'm like a total nosy busybody now, but that is the joy of local government.
I'm getting old, yeah. I think the point where you start caring about bins is the start of middle age. I think that is that's
listen,
the form
Sam,
of definition.
You have no idea, right? Bins are really important in people's lives.
And I remember they matter a lot.
One time, do you remember Twitter started doing these like Twitter spaces? There was one night they did one on bins and local government and bins. And I'm not joking. There were so many people on this thing listening to bins. The bin chat was like, we should actually do a dedicated special on bins.
We should do one on bins and how many bins there are for different types of recycling.
Yeah. Welcome to the bin fire episode of The Power Test.
But that apart, I think, you know, the other thing about these elections, which perhaps makes them even more interesting than usual, is that we've got the mayoral elections and the sort of number of mayoral elections grows every time as more and more areas get mayors. And some of those people, you know, obviously Sadiq Khan, we've had a mayor in London for a long time, but people like Andy Burnham or, you know, Jamie Driscoll, who's standing as an independent now up in the northeast, have started to get name recognition. Andy Street in the West Mids, Ben Houchen for the Tories. And that's quite different. I don't think many people could name the leader of their local council, but people can start to name their mayor. And that actually, I think, will make these elections start to feel more relevant to people, that someone like Andy Burnham can do something and does make a difference to their area.
Yeah, and I think at a time when people are really cynical and just fed up with Westminster politics, and I think we're living through this really interesting era. I mean, our podcast is called The Power Test, and people desperately want power. And yet people feel it doesn't matter, you know, who's in power. People in Westminster seem to have no power to do anything to change their lives. Whereas local mayors are more interesting. I mean, you look at what, for example, Andy Burnham has done with buses and transport in Manchester, and he's used that platform to really kind of punch through, whether it was through the pandemic or kind of since then. So I'm not saying everybody loves their mayors, because there have been, like, for example, Marvin Rees was the mayor for Bristol. There was a referendum to get rid of the post of mayor. So it's not like everybody loves their mayor. But I think the rise of the mayor is a really interesting development in British politics.
And I think it might change the relationship people have to local politics, and also might help local media revive as well, which is taken a massive hit over the last decade or so from the loss of classified, almost complete loss of classified advertising in newspapers. You know, far fewer local journalists, every local paper online now, or not everyone, but a lot of them are just sort of awful clickbait sites that are cluttered with loads of awful videos. So if it can help, you know, we've started to see some new emerging journalism around some of the cities that have mayors as well. So it's one of the more optimistic things around British politics at the moment. And to discuss all this with us, we have Anoush Shakadian, who's the Britain editor at New Statesman and is the host of their podcast, multi-award-winning host of their podcast, and has been there in various roles for some time, covering a lot of the issues that we want to talk about today, covering local elections, but also local government more broadly, and some of the big challenges that local areas now have.
Now, we're all on tenterhooks about the election. We are all going on and on about the fact that this is a big election year. We're waiting for the announcement about the general election. We thought it might be May. Goodness knows where it's going to be. But there are really important local elections on the scene. And we're delighted to have Anoush Shakadian from the New Statesman joining Sam and myself to chew through this. Anoush, local elections are really important because local government is really important. And in fact, local government's really on its knees at the moment. You know, lots of people are really kind of seeing the effects of austerity. And, you know, we're not really talking about these local elections. Are they slightly lost because we're all speculating about the general election so much?
Yeah, I think they've been completely lost in the political narrative, haven't they? I mean, all anyone is talking about is what date the general election is going to be, forgetting that we have quite major elections coming up very soon in May. And actually, you know, you've got a number of councils up for election, but also you've got all the police and crime commissioners in England and Wales, and a bunch of mayoralties, including the London mayoralty and the London Assembly as well. So this is quite a lot of elections. And what's interesting is that most of the council seats that are up for election in May were last contested in May 2021. And that's a really interesting time, because I think you'll probably remember that that was the time of the vaccine bounce for the Tories. And it was also the same day that Keir Starmer lost Hartlepool to the Tories in that by-election. So it was a real nadir for his leadership. It was a bad time for Labour and actually quite a good time for the Conservatives. So, you know, that could really, really shift the narrative about Rishi Sunak overnight, basically, if it's an absolute bloodbath, which it could be.
I mean, they're expecting to do badly. So I suppose the question is just exactly how badly do they do? There's some councils up, you know, that they've held forever, like Dorset. You know, you can't imagine Dorset not being a Tory council, but it might not be, you know, on the day after the local election. So it's always that sort of game with local elections where it's sort of expectations management and what does bad really look like. They know it's going to be bad, but what's bad enough that it might actually really get the Conservatives properly scared and thinking maybe we do need to ditch Sunak after all?
Yeah, I don't know what the expectations management figures will be. You know, they'll say that they'll lose X number of seats, but
they'll lose all of them. They'll all go.
And that's probably quite fair.
Yeah, it's probably fair. I mean, they made quite significant gains in these seats last time. So they were 235 seats up, Labour 327 down. So like I said, they've got a big, big ledge to fall from. So even the most assiduous spin from CCHQ might not take in exactly how big the fall could be. And I think that could be a very, very vulnerable moment for Rishi Sunak.
And I think it's also just a really important point just to stop and reflect at how politics has changed in that period of time since those last big elections, and particularly Hartlepool, Anoush, because you're absolutely right. I remember that so clearly because people were saying, is Keir Starmer going to last as leader? This was meant to be a massive test for him. there was then an attempt to sort of sack Angela Rayner, which resulted in basically Angela Rayner sort of duffing up Keir Starmer and getting like a massive promotion. And I remember at that point, this feeling of crisis within the Labour Party, and lots of moderates such as myself being in panic, so thinking everybody was kind of pinning their hopes on Keir Starmer for this revival. I actually remember messaging Keir Starmer at the time, just saying, this is absolutely terrible. And to be fair, he messaged back saying, this is terrible. I'm not trying to spin it. It is extraordinary news about how things have changed in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, they really have. And actually, I think in a way that's caught Labour itself by surprise. Obviously, they sort of rejigged their campaign operation. The leader of the opposition's office got rejigged in that time as well. But I was speaking to someone who knows what's going on in the leader's office quite well. And they were saying, we were just expecting Keir Starmer to blow the doors off. We weren't expecting him to get into the room. And now it's almost like it's taken them by surprise that they not only could win, but could win quite significantly. These local elections will give a flavour of how they're going to do, but it will also put pressure on them as well, because I mean, your podcast captures very well this power test. They're not necessarily ready for government, and they're going to have a really, really grim inheritance, as Rachel Reeves has been reminding everyone.
And the more obvious it becomes that they are going to win, I think, you know, John Curtis said fairly recently that there were a 99% chance that Keir Starmer is going to be prime minister. The more it becomes inevitable, the more people just start treating them as if they're the government and expecting them to be able to answer all these questions and sort of start ignoring the Conservatives and their manifesto. And that actually, as you say, that puts real pressure because they don't have much to say yet. Oppositions rarely do.
Well, that's the thing. And actually, you'll remember from 2019, obviously, Labour had all sorts of other problems then. But it was when they started putting their manifesto commitments out that people who were campaigning on the doorstep for Labour, candidates, MPs were telling me this was when we were in real trouble, because people just didn't believe what we were saying. Some of the policies might have been relatively popular, but it was an onslaught of information and people just didn't see Labour as a credible party for government. And so it's very risky when you start putting those policies out there, when you start pulling your manifesto together. But they have to do that, don't they? I mean, the better that they do in these local elections, and you know, the sooner the rumours of a general election come in, then there will be increased scrutiny, as there already is, over what Labour would actually look like in government. I think that's a risky time for them.
One of the other things which is interesting is that the Tories are using as an attack line what's happening in Labour-run areas.
Yeah.
Whether it's London or other places like that. And of course, we know that councils are under a huge amount of pressure at the moment. And that's actually where there's a source of a lot of real kind of pain for people, seeing their services being cut, their, you know, council tax having to go up. Birmingham City Council has gone bankrupt. A number of others are probably teetering on the brink of bankruptcy. How do you think Labour sells its message about local government and delivering for people in local government when things are so hard?
Well, this is the big question, isn't it? Because you've had eight councils go bankrupt since 2010. It should be a story of how the Conservative governments since then have failed local government. But actually, you can see, like you say, in some of the Conservative rhetoric that they're blaming Labour-run councils. And actually, you know, a lot of cities, a lot of major councils are run by Labour administrations. Labour needs to have a retort for that. And they don't, because they don't really have a plan for what they would do to rescue further councils from bankruptcy when they get into government. They want to allow them to plan their finances longer than just a year, so longer financial settlements for them, budget planning. But there really isn't anything that substantial on reforming council tax, reforming how social care is delivered, which are the, you know, two major big wicked problems in politics, as they call them, that no one really wants to touch. And actually, some of their plans, which is ironic, could be even worse for councils. So they have this idea of striking a fair wage deal for care workers, perfectly good. You know, every Labour councillor would agree with that in principle. But actually, it's councils that have to pay those wages.
It's not funded, yeah.
Yeah. I've heard from Labour councillors and MPs in areas where the councils are sort of teetering on the brink of bankruptcy express concern about this, because this is one of their pledges for their first 100 days if they stick to those labour rights changes that they want to make. So they don't have a huge amount to say in response to what the Conservatives are saying about the state of Labour councils. I think the public is starting to see through the Tory spin that it's Labour councillors who have messed up their local neighbourhoods. I think there's such a pattern here across the country. country of public services and the public realm being degraded, that I think people are tying it to national government failings rather than just their local authorities.
I mean, Birmingham's a really interesting one because there aren't any council elections in Birmingham this time, but there is the mayoral election, which covers Birmingham in the West Mids. And Andy Street, who's a Conservative, is the mayor there. And he won last time, but he hasn't got a very big majority. He's a relatively popular mayor. He's distanced himself very strongly from the National Conservative Party, uses green leaflets and all the rest of it. And I think one of the big questions for me is he able to hold on against a national tide that will go against the Conservatives? Have people started to think of mayors differently enough that they will vote for the person rather than the party? Or does he just get blown away in a general move against the Conservatives? And you say the same for Ben Houchen up in Teesside. How those two do is a real interesting story for the night, I think.
Yeah, that's definitely what we'll be keeping an eye on. I think it would be so interesting to see whether or not there is that incumbency factor and also that sort of independent from the party centre factor that actually Andy Burnham and other Labour mayors have also benefited from. And Andy Street and Ben Houchen, Andy Burnham, some of these other mayors, they have good name recognition in their regions. They are political figures in themselves. But yes, Andy Street in particular, if he loses to Labour, then that's a big shift because the Midlands has been moving Tory for a long time, since the Second World War. There's a lot of Conservative MPs in the Midlands. So to see a shift there. And of course, we've got an East Midlands mayoralty coming up, a new mayoralty.
Yes, with Ben Bradley fighting for the Conservatives, who's the MP for Mansfield. Yeah,
that will tell a sort of story of whether or not that Tory, not a resurgence, but the Tory momentum in that part of the country can bear out.
The one I'm really curious about, and it may be just me who is interested in this, is the North Yorkshire one, which is another new mayoralty. I think people would have thought that would just be obviously Tory. It covers York and North Yorkshire, which is some of the richest, you know, parts of the country outside of London. It covers Rishi Sunak's seat in Richmond. But people up there are saying that Labour might actually have a chance of winning that. And I think that might be something that scared the crap out of the Tories to, you know, even if they were expecting a bad night, to lose North Yorkshire is the one part of Yorkshire where they've always held, would be a real blow.
Yeah, and you can see the headlines, you know, Rishi Sunak defeated in his own backyard.
Yeah.
If that happens. Yeah. And obviously you've got Labour mayors in the other Yorkshire mayoralties, South Yorkshire, yes. West Yorkshire. And so that gives Labour a clean sweep up there.
I'm Flo.
And I'm John.
And if this episode has got you thinking and you've got your own thoughts, reflections and ideas to share, then come and join us and other members of the Power Test community for The Debrief.
Each week, The Debrief is your chance to discuss everything about this week's pod, dissect the key takeaways, and look at where we go next.
We're live every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Spaces, over at The Power Test on Twitter.
So come and join us, and together, let's talk more about how we can change Britain for the better.
Make sure you're subscribed to get a reminder and all the latest from the team, and much more.
But there is a bit of red on red action as well in terms of these mayoral races, because Jamie Driscoll has sort of left the Labour fold. He's standing as an independent. He's quite popular. He's quite a big character there. He's the independent now north of Tyne mayor. There's a very good woman, Kim McGuinness, who is going for it. It's quite boy heavy, isn't it, Anoush, the mayor's. Tell us about what that means for Labour, that race.
This is sort of not Labour covering itself in glory, really, because Jamie Driscoll, who was the north of Tyne mayor, now that mayoralty is sort of being absorbed into this new northeast mayor. He was barred from standing again for sharing a platform with Ken Loach. It did cause a lot of red on red controversy, and not just along factional lines, because you did have Andy Burnham and Steve Rotherham come out and condemn that decision from the leadership. So it was a bit politically tricky. Yes, and of course now you have him running against a Labour candidate, so that makes it a slightly messy race for a part of the UK that Labour really want to be seen to be doing well in. I mean, the North East is one of these places where you had historic losses, the so-called red wall seats in 2019. So Labour really wants to reputationally look like it's doing well there. It could have been handled better.
Obviously, as political nerds, we'll get very excited about these races and these elections, and there'll be lots of narrative setting that goes on in the wee hours of the morning. But where do you think the public are on this, Anoush? What do you think turnout is going to be like? Is there a lot of active campaigning going on at the moment? Are they fizzing with excitement?
I've never known a sadder feeling than I have now when I go around.
What, being on this podcast?
Yes, you're depressing me, guys.
That's Sam.
For my job, I go around the country a lot, speak to a lot of people in different constituencies and communities. And there really is a lack of faith in politics at the moment, regardless of party. Keir Starmer's Labour, to be fair to them, have picked up on that a bit. And that's why he doesn't like sort of making grand statements, promising big policies and making promises he can't keep, because he knows that there's that cynicism out there. So I do think there is this plague on all their houses feeling out in the country that could affect turnout, particularly Conservative voters who haven't made up their minds and aren't convinced by any of the other options. They may stay at home. There's a bit of a vulnerability here for the main parties losing votes either to apathy, people staying at home, or to populism. You know, maybe people might go to Reform or go to independent candidates.
You mentioned sort of apathy from Conservative voters. What about young progressives who may feel they're not over the moon with what Labour is offering right now? Could we see a bit of the Gaza effect as well in terms of people not being motivated to go out and vote?
Yeah, I think you could see that for sure. I mean, we've had a number of Labour councillors actually quit the party over the Gaza issue. So already you have that playing out in local government. And then you do have a lot of voters who feel that they don't really have a home. And that's something that I think Sadiq Khan's team has picked up on as well. Because we've got first past the post coming back for the mayoral elections, there is a bit of concern in that camp that they won't get those Lib Dem and Green second preferences that they used to, and that people will vote Green and Lib Dem first time, or for an independent candidate first time, rather than for Khan because of that issue. You know, there are people who feel a bit alienated by Labour's stance on Gaza, and they're worried that they might lose out on that support. And you saw what happened in Rochdale as well. So they know that it's not a general and they might want to express their distaste. And that doesn't necessarily just go the Tories' way. Some people might want to send Labour a message.
And London is sort of a really interesting one. I've never known such a difference between what the polls are saying and the mood of the camp. You've got, you know, polls coming out from a range of different pollsters saying Sadiq Khan's 24, 25 points ahead, is going to win very, very comfortably. The Conservatives have picked a candidate who you would not naturally associate with the sort of people who would who live in London, someone who's backed Trump in the past and sort of very, very right-wing candidate in Susan Hall. And yet the Sadiq Khan camp do feel really nervous, partly, as you say, it's about first past the post coming back, partly a bit about Gaza and how that might affect some parts of London, but also just people not turning out, just being a lack of enthusiasm for what Sadiq Khan's done, and just somehow the Tories get their vote out in the suburbs, Labour don't get their vote out in the inner cities, and you get this sort of remarkable Susan Hall victory out of nowhere.
Yeah, and they're also worried about the effect of voter ID as well, because this will be the first time sort of all Londoners will be expected to have ID when they're voting, and their internal polling shows 15% of Londoners don't have the necessary ID to vote, and that goes even higher, that proportion, for younger voters and voters of Pakistani and Bangladeshi heritage, all of whom, you know, might be more likely to turn out for Sadiq Khan. So I think that also comes into their concerns. I think, you know, some of it is spin. They don't want complacency to set in.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, I know there is expectation management, but I think those changes are of material substance. And I think there's always been a kind of an outer ring of London that has a lot of issues with Sadiq Khan. And then, of course, you have ULEZ and you have the kind of war on sort of cars and all this kind of stuff. But I think in the more inner city areas, certainly where I live in Brixton, for example, you are seeing the rise of a lot of really bad antisocial behaviour and things like that. And it's part of this feeling of decline that we're seeing in a lot of these big cities at the moment, because we're seeing the kind of cost of living crisis colliding with poverty and destitution, colliding with police cuts. There's just a whole kind of perfect storm of things which are really taking root. And I think that the Tories did that sort of ridiculous Batman-esque, ridiculous advert about London. But I do think even people who absolutely despise Conservatives are feeling like something is going a bit wrong with London at the moment. And there are a lot of kind of issues that they're unhappy with. So I think Sadiq Khan will win, but I think it's going to be quite interesting to see by what margin, because he's, you know, he's always done quite well. And then it'll be quite interesting to see the narrative that the Tories kind of spin after that.
Yeah, and you can't help but feel if the Tories had actually tried to pick a candidate that might appeal to people who live in London, that they would have a chance of even winning. But, you know.
Well, you speak to somebody like Paul Scully, who was a London minister. Mm. You know, he's a good communicator. He's quite connected with Londoners. And he was kind of barred from standing. So it's almost like the Tories have sort of given up on London, but they just want to attack Sadiq Khan really hard on it.
Yeah, some of their advertising for the London mayor election hasn't really been aimed at London at all. It's been aimed at the rest of the country to try and make London look horribly scary and a premonition of what a Labour government would look like. They're getting to the point now where London is being defined as the enemy, which makes it ever harder to actually win anything in London. We might be at the point of the general election where they win no seats in Inner London, or maybe only one seat in Inner London.
Yeah. Why stand candidates in a city you clearly hate? You know, it's a very odd message. But Anoush, the other thing I just wanted to ask you with your kind of political eye is that local elections can often be quite a good way of doing a test run for a general election. How do you think Labour will be sort of using this local election to sort of get match fit for a general election?
This is why it's so useful to have these local elections, because it does tell you where your weaknesses are in terms of campaign capacity, resource. I know that there are fears that their resources might be a bit stretched in those marginal seats that they want to fight, because those MPs that represent seats with more significant Muslim communities are going to have to work harder in a general election than they anticipated. So that is something that I think they're going to be keeping an eye on in these elections, because there is a bit of concern, not necessarily that they'll lose seats because of the Gaza issue, but they'll lose some resource because they'll have to sort of stay in their patch rather than going and helping their neighbour who's fighting a Tory Labour marginal. I think it will be interesting to see whether or not there's any changes in trend. So the Police and Crime Commissioner elections are of interest, because most of them are Tory. So I think something like 86% of PCCs in England are Tory. And it will be interesting to see whether or not there is an effect in terms of changing people's votes for those elections and seeing Labour as more of the party of law and order. Because, you know, you've got police now failing to solve, I think 90% of crimes police fail to solve. But also, like you mentioned, Aisha, you've got very visible sort of low level criminality going on, antisocial behaviour, shoplifting is a big one as well. And if voters do sort of match the PCC vote to the theme of law and order, then that's something that Labour might sort of take some heart from and could make more of a central message of its general election campaign. I think they will be looking closely at London, because you've got the London Assembly elections too. And so that could tell you a lot about how different Londoners in different parts of the capital feel. TfL has been performing poorly. You've got the ULEZ issue, and also just the issue of Khan's mayoralty. It's gone on for a long time, and there is quite a lot of apathy out there, and people can't necessarily see what he's brought to the city. So I think there'll be that too, especially for London MPs who are worried about losing not only votes to those more right-wing voters who fear for their rights as motorists, but also those voters who we were talking about, the sort of younger, more progressive voters who might take their votes elsewhere to the Greens or Lib Dems if they're getting fed up with Labour not taking their interests seriously.
On the point of Sadiq Khan being there a long time, do you think we should have term limits for mayors?
Yeah, it's a really hard question to answer, because we haven't really had that problem. We haven't had a very long-serving mayor in London. But if you had a mayor that sort of sat there for years and you couldn't see the city really improving, then maybe it would be something that you might think, okay, we do need to have a cap on this. But it's hard to tell.
If it is, as everybody is predicting, just another absolute disaster-roo of a night for Rishi Sunak, what's the political fallout? Is Penny Morden bringing the guns out at that point? Or what do you think is going to happen?
I do think that there's a lot of rancour in the Conservative Party, even among those MPs that you might call the sensibles, you know, the ones in the One Nation group who have tried to work cooperatively with Sunak. And actually, they have got quite a lot of representation around the cabinet table as well. There is some disquiet among them as well. And that always tells me that there might be something more going on under the surface. And I think if it is a real calamity for the Conservatives, regardless of whatever expectations management they put in before the election, then I think it could be a period of real danger for Sunak, because it's almost like there's not that much to lose now.
The problem is when you get onto the someone else, who is the someone else? You know, I think Penny Mordaunt is sort of seen as the most popular amongst the public from a thin field for now, but I don't think she's that respected by many Tory MPs, if we're honest. Someone like Kemi Badenoch seen as a bit of a risk, given she's still pretty untested nationally. I think there's sort of a sense that Sunak's done worse than expected, but also a sort of, okay, and what else can we do? Because who else is going to do a better job?
I heard a great rumour, which, and I'm sure you might have heard this, that actually this stuff about Penny Mordaunt being ready to stand up and fight is not in fact coming from Penny Mordaunt, and it's actually coming from someone at Downing Street as a bit of a sort of dark arts operation to set frame her as the stalking horse so that everyone goes, oh no, we wouldn't want her, and you know, shows up Rishi Sunak.
Yeah, I've heard that too. God, I think they should be spending their time on other things, don't you?
I mean, everything's going so well. Now, Anoush, I just wanted to put something to you because I've been mulling this over, and I think when you look particularly at some of the Labour mayors, people like, you know, Andy Burnham, Tracy Braben, Sadiq Khan, Steve Rotherham, there's some really big figures from the Labour Party who decided to leave Westminster under the Jeremy Corbyn years because they thought that Labour would be in the wilderness for a long time and they wanted to go and do something useful. Well, how do you think they're feeling now with Labour being on the brink of government? How do you think they feel about their decision? Do you think there's part of them thinking, I wish I'd sort of stuck in Westminster? What do you think?
Well, I actually asked Andy Burnham and Steve Rotherham this because I interviewed them recently. They were telling me about sort of the decision that they came to. I think they were in the pub together and they came to this decision. Okay, we're going to leave Westminster. We're going to run for these elections together. You know, I did ask them sort of how could things change for your position with a Labour government getting in? And, you know, they may have been trying to spin a line, but they were saying, look at what we've achieved so far in our cities. And they have made significant achievements under devolution. Imagine what we could do with a Labour government that has more goodwill towards us. That's been one of City Hall's biggest problems, is that Sadiq Khan has always been fighting against a Conservative government that doesn't want necessarily the best for London. Actually, I think in a way, it might be something that boosts their standing, even though they're outside of Westminster, if they have a Labour government that, you know, is willing even more to cooperate with them and, you know, free up more devolutionary powers, but also more money for their cities.
And you can see it, the amount of kind of hostile briefing from the leader's office about Andy Burnham has really calmed down as well, because things were quite tense for a while. But I think it's going to be really interesting to see how, if there is a Labour government, devolution does get the chance to sort of have a proper blossoming of devolution, because, you know, relationships are very important in all of this stuff. Well, Anoush, we're coming to the end of our time and it's now time for our quick fire question round. So I hope you're prepared. Sam, you can kick this off.
Okay. Oh,
he's clearing his throat. He means business.
Who is the one person, can be dead, alive, fictional, who you would draft into Keir Starmer's first cabinet, and what role would you put them in?
This is a bit of a cliche, actually, but I would choose Martin Lewis because he's still one of the most trusted men in the country, I think. And I do think Labour should have more of a sort of consumer rights kind of rip off Britain message, because it speaks to a lot of people. I'm loath to put him in as Chancellor because obviously I want Rachel Reeves to get her moment as the first female Chancellor. So maybe I'd put him in her team. I'd put him in the Treasury team.
He could be like Chief Secretary to the Treasury, couldn't he?
He's the most trusted person in Britain, isn't he? Like, he comes out in polls as if we actually had an elected head of state, he probably would win.
So. Yeah, and sometimes he even gets confused for the leader of the opposition in focus groups as well.
Yeah, we'll get him into government. He won't be trusted for much longer.
No, exactly. I mean, I would advise him against everything.
Okay, what do you think's one issue that just isn't getting as much coverage in the media as it deserves, or even enough attention from the Labour Party right now?
Well, I know we've already talked about it, so it's a bit of a boring one, but fixing local government finance, basically. I think Labour need to have an answer to that, and they don't. And there's all sorts of things that they can do without making big spending commitments, like council tax reform, changes to business rates, you know, sorting out adult social care. Okay, maybe that would require some spending commitments.
A little bit of money, yeah.
Yeah, deciding a different way of structuring it. So I think they need to think about that.
And finally, what's the one test you'd set the Labour Party to demonstrate that they are changing Britain for the better?
I would like to see if their planning commitments will actually come off. So Starmer has said he would ignore local opposition to developments. Can he really do that? If they really win as many MPs as the polls tell us they will, they're going to have a lot of MPs representing places with nice, lovely green spaces. And are they really going to want their government, the first thing they do, sign off on a load of building projects?
And when the National Trust and kick off their campaign and the RSPB and all of them get involved, it's pretty hard to fight that lobby. So, yeah, I'm with you. I hope they commit to that, but it will be a big test for the first couple of years.
Well, Anoush, we've come to the end of our time. Thank you so much. That was such an interesting conversation. And we know that at least the three of us are very excited about local elections.
Someone is.
I love a local election.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. And if you are not a member of the Paratest crew, you can head to the paratest.co.uk or the paratest.substack.com. You'll get episodes ad-free and early before anyone else. And there's also an exclusive chance to be part of the podcast and lots more. Also, do get involved with us. If you've got any questions or comments or like ideas you'd like us to explore, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us on pod@theparatest.co.uk. You can also get involved on social media as well.
And we've also got our brand new YouTube channel, which is a Power Test Pod, and you can find clips on there. The Power Test only exists because of the amazing support from you, our members, and our supporters. And we're also delighted to have the backing of some brilliant organisations like the Future Governance Forum, which is providing intellectual and practical infrastructure vital to the revival of progressive government in the UK, and the Centre for Progressive Policy, a think tank championing inclusive economic growth. We're also really glad to have support from the Institute for Global Change, who provide us with exceptional research and briefings, and also partner with the fantastic Labour List, bringing to life many of the issues, themes and discussions we're covering on the pod.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.